Hi everyone, this is Laura and I'm here with my colleagues and friends, Sylvia and Kofi, and welcome to Bookish. Hi. So today we're gathered together to talk about this idea or question about ambiguity, especially in stories or novels, short stories. I was thinking about this actually after we chatted the other day about ambiguity in poetry, but I thought maybe that's just a given. We need ambiguity, like we have ambiguity in poetry, and that's part of the one of the draws of poetry too. So today's conversation will mostly focus on short stories and novels and some examples from that. So I think Sylvia has some questions for us to kick off the discussion.
Yeah. So for our listeners, you might be wondering like, huh, what a random topic to be discussing, because thus far, like if you're following along, we've been talking about novels or short story collections and things like, you know, how do you find your next great read? What are you reading for summer reading? And so this kind of feels like a little bit of a hard left turn for us, but it really isn't, because almost during all of the books that we've read together in the background, like back channel chat, is that what they call it? We've been, Kofi, Laura, and I'm talking a lot about some of these like ambiguous or unresolved elements in storytelling that sometimes pique our interest, sometimes drive us crazy, you know, and it's just, it's always a really interesting point of discussion and conversation. So we thought it would be a great discussion to have with you all as well. So ambiguity is an ambiguous topic. You know, what do we mean by ambiguity? So, you know, that's my first question for us. You know, what do we mean by ambiguity in fiction? What does that mean to you guys?
I will try to answer that in a less than ambiguous way. I think there's a level of uncertainty with some stories. And I think it's a tool that fiction writers or writers use to explore that gray matter, that space that doesn't have a clear resolution or a well-defined space, if you will. And that I think ambiguity is used to try to convey a message about that uncertainty, that we really never know the way we think we ought to know or think we should know. Yeah, I think that's one way of thinking about it. That helps me.
I think the other way, maybe more commonly thought of way, might be like endings usually, right? Sometimes we focus on how the resolution, how clear it is or definitive it is. And I hear the same thing with movies too, right? At the end, sometimes you come to the last scene or you come to the last page of the book and you're like, what? That's it? Like, where's the rest of this? So I think there are differences between sort of unclear, unfinished kind of endings versus endings that are meant to be left, you know, ambiguous. And that is the point. And I think there are different degrees of, you know, what people like in terms of like how ambiguous an ending, especially if it's something like a mystery or thriller or something like that, how that ending is satisfying or not satisfying.
That reminds me of one of the most famous ambiguous endings in a film, which is Inception, right? There's a lot of like debate over, you know, what happened when he spun that thing, right? That top thing. But that also kind of relates to my understanding or the way that I view ambiguity in storytelling a lot of times is the idea of truth telling. And I think maybe that's what you're talking about, Kofi, when you're referring to like gray matter. Like to me, you know, there needs to be a kernel of truth in the story or the thing that I'm reading, whatever the genre may be. But once that truth is called into question, you know, like through an ending, for example, that kind of defies what I would have expected to happen, or like through like an unreliable narrator or storyteller, I really find a lot of ambiguity and tension in that when like the reality of things is questioned, if that makes any sense. So like we were talking about like in our next book for Bookish that we're going to be reading, I will spoiler alert announcement here, is Our Particular Kind of Black Man by Tope Fullerin. And, you know, and there's some moments in that where you question your own memory, you know, for example, your own recollection. And I think for me, like the idea of questioning my own story, my own recollection, my own memory, to me, like, really puts me in a place of ambiguity, like uncertainty. I think that's kind of what you, that's what you said, Kofi, right? Like uncertainty, that that really, that does something to me in a story. You know, it really makes me think hard about, you know, my experience and the way that I am viewing it versus somebody else who might be viewing that same experience quite differently, and whose recollection, if, especially if it's a past experience, is the right one, the true one. And it makes me rethink that all the time.
That comment, your comment about memory, but also then tying that to the notion of true or truth, reminds me of Tim O'Brien's The Things They Carried, where I think most people are more familiar with the story called The Things They Carried, but the novel or the collection itself includes a story called How to Tell a True War Story. And also the book itself is, you know, Tim O'Brien's, it's fiction, but we know there's a character named Tim O'Brien in the book, right? And we know Tim O'Brien, the author, was in Vietnam and was there and in the war. And so there's also this notion of the author kind of blurring the line between memoir or biography with fiction. He's calling it fiction, but he's in the book in some ways. So in How to Tell a True War Story, the story is about how to tell a true war story. And towards the end of that story, he tells a story. He says, here's a story. And he tells us like a little short story. And then he calls it, he says, that's a true story that never happened. And I believe those, that's a line from that story, and really makes you question, you know, when we're asking this question, what happened or what is the truth? That question's relationship to what, like, what are we talking about when we say, is it true or it didn't happen, but somehow it's true. And the notion is that the emotion, the ideas, the feelings, the values, all these other things, abstract notions attached to that story that didn't happen are true. So I'd recommend that story. I mean, the whole book really, but that story to really think about this question about memory and what we mean by true when we're talking about storytelling.
Yeah, I think even with The Secret Lives of Church Ladies, Daisha Filia has this part, this moment in Jael or Jael, in which, and it's told between a granddaughter and a grandmother's point of view, it vacillates. And the daughter, the protagonist Jael, is leaving a house, and then of probably what we would call a pedophile, or definitely someone who preys on young girls, and his house blows up. And she's the only one, that she's the last person there. And the grandmother starts with, I slept through it. I hadn't been sleeping too well these last couple of weeks, but I took a pill as soon as I got home from Bible study, and it knocked me right out. The barber next door said she heard it, woke up out of her deep sleep just a little after 3 this morning. She said it was a big boom, and she thought it was thunder, and then rolled over and went back to sleep. But then she heard the sirens. And so we don't really know if Jael did something to cause that explosion, but it's assumed that she probably did. But then what does that say about her? And I think that that's where there's this level of uncertainty. That's where we're not really sure what to make out of this person in that moment. And I probably just ruined this story for several people.
I think it's okay. I think you're doing us a favor.
Yeah, but you know what? We talked about this book months ago. They should have read it by now.
That specific story, we kind of vacillated on what actually happened, because there are some details provided, I think, before that about like Child's observations of the man in question, like smoking a cigarette. And she seems to pick up on this detail that he smokes, you know, his cigarettes in his home. And then there's this explosion. So you kind of, but so my, okay. So my next question, I guess, for us is, why choose to tell a story that way? You know, what is the purpose or the value even of leaving things out, details, or messing with, you know, like what could be true or real? You know, are they just, are writers just messing with the reader's mind? You know, like I'm thinking turn of the screw, you know, totally unreliable narrator. And what's the purpose of that?
I want to actually comment on that about Jael specifically. I noticed that when I was reading it the first time, next to the paragraph that says, so grandma, you know, says, Barbara said there was, you know, it blew up, blah, blah, blah. No other fatalities is what the news said. And then next to this paragraph, I wrote, did she kill him? And the paragraph says, Jael did something this morning she ain't done in years. She climbed in my bed with me and went back to sleep. So even before I got to the next few paragraphs where we begin to hear more clues about why we might suspect Jael, just that like small, subtle detail that something is different about Jael is like a very subtle and big and yet somehow a loud hint that something is different. And then that's why my suspicion is, oh my gosh, did Jael kill him or blow out the house or whatever? And then as you go through it, you'd see there are more details or questions in grandma's mind as to why that might be the case, that Jael might be responsible. But the other part of it too is that at the very end of that story, the author includes from Judges, from the Bible, the story of Jael, right? So throughout, in earlier in the story, we hear about like how grandma named her and why had she known who this biblical character was, she wouldn't have named Jael. And there's some regret and she doesn't tell you why that is. You're just supposed to like, oh, it's not a good name apparently. But at the end of the story, then she includes this section that tells you who Jael in the Bible is. And so, you know, that withholding of that information about the source of the name and why this bothered grandma, who's a church lady, and then telling us about it at the end of the story, again, is sort of building that ambiguity in the middle of the story to kind of reveal at the end, though, what that was about, right? Yeah. And I just think that these moves that the writer is making in this story is really brilliant in building that ambiguity to carry us through the story and revealing certain things and not other things.
Yeah, it takes a steady hand, you know, and probably a lot of revision to get to that space, because right. I think the temptation would be to try to reveal it or leave real big clues that, you know, defeat the purpose of having that end part.
I think I hear it phrased in like cooking shows, believe it or not, as like the act of restraint, you know, that showing restraint in your art form is actually harder, you know, the temptation is often to put all the ingredients in there, you know, but really showing restraint actually, you know, draws out other flavors, for example, a little bit more so that, you know, the consumer, their palate isn't totally overwhelmed. And I'm wondering if there's something similar to that, like happening in, especially in that story where she's, you know, where the writer is actually asking the reader to focus in on something, to really concentrate on those ambiguous moments and then think about afterwards what difference that makes in how we are engaging in the story and what Jael has done. And to me, that story boiled down to like moral ambiguity. And that's why it was, to me, like that's why she wrote it that way, you know, because so what if Jael did it and she admitted that she did it, right? Versus she did it, but she kind of did it on the sly. It's still a terrible thing to take, you know, to murder somebody, you know. And we talked about this in our previous episode, but it's also terrible to do these other things that this man was doing as well. And so, you know, I don't know, like it puts you in a morally ambiguous state of mind too, I think. So,
yeah. Does the ends really justify the means? If instead of it being this guy, it was someone like R. Kelly and a young lady did that to him, would we empathize or sympathize for him, or would we feel like she had no choice in the matter? But in Jael's place, she did have choice in the matter. She actually went to the house, and maybe it was more out of jealousy if she did something, because her friend had more feelings for this man in a way that she did not. She kind of liked her friend, you know, there was this sort of homoeroticism there. So I don't know if that says something morally either, but I think you're right that there's a level of moral ambiguity. Like, whose side do you really fall on? Or do you fall on none of their sides? Or do you just feel sorry for the grandma?
Well, because in the story, everyone is sinning in different ways, right? Exactly. And even from grandma's point of view, I mean, it's dramatic at the end, like the contrast to the all the things that grandma is thinking is, you know, Jael is being bad by not going to church, for example, or, you know, mm-hmm. liking girls. She suspects that, you know, there's something weird going on with Sadie, the pastor's wife, and Jael. So the degrees of what she considers immorality or what's immoral, and she then purposefully doesn't take Jael to church, right? And now she's sinning by stopping her granddaughter from going to church, right? Not taking her to church. So there are these different degrees of sinning or being morally not good. And then to end with, dare I say, ultimate, I don't know, sin of murder. That's interesting, the contrast of those sins.
And then to end with judges, like, because
yes.
people, you know, judging your sins in a broader sense in a way.
Right.
Yeah, I think that that's, but there are so many other stories that do the exact same thing. You know, I think we spoke last time, I mentioned A Gathering of Old Men by Ernest Gaines, where a murder has occurred. And, you know, throughout the chapters, you're getting everyone's perspective on that murder. But you never really get the sense of this is the exact culprit until towards the end. And even then, there's some wonder if it was and truly that person. And I think that's good. I think that sometimes we want clarity because there's so much out here that's confusing and chaotic. And so we want our books to sort of have some kind of closure. But maybe I think that's not realistic. That's not the realism of fiction in that genre of fiction. It might be more fantasy or, you know, sci-fi-ish, that the hero always wins. Well, maybe it's not a hero. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe it's the anti-hero who's winning, you know, and
yeah.
That's why I think so. I think you're right about that, Kofi. I think there are some readers out there who gravitate more towards clear-cut stories because there's comfort in that, right? There's comfort in certainty because all around us, and if you've been paying attention to like any of the trials going on lately, you know, certainly you can see this in action in real life, the idea of one experience or event retold through different people's perspectives. And depending on the perspective, you get a wildly different version of what has happened. And I think in literature, if you think about like, you know, the different reasons why folks might go to literature for something, a lot of it could be like, you know, an escape from reality, right? Or it could be to make sense of the world around them, what's happening in the world around them, to learn, to understand, to empathize, whatever it might be. But I think there is comfort in certainty. And I think ambiguity makes folks, you know, it challenges you. It challenges your brain in a different way. I'm thinking of actually Interior Chinatown that we read. And Laura, you pointed to this before, the idea of ambiguity in genre too, right? Mm-hmm. What happens when a story doesn't fit our understanding of what a story should look like even? So in Interior Chinatown, you know, it took me a minute to figure out what was going on. I was like, am I reading a script or is this real? Is this a real alternate reality? And it was challenging for me to figure out like in this world of, you know, of this like Law and Order type of show that's being like constantly filmed, like, is this what's real? Like what's part of the show and what's not part of the show, you know? And that's kind of part of the point of that novel, but that everybody's playing a part. You can't distinguish, you know, between when you're playing a part and when you're not. So, you know, like all of that kind of made me uncomfortable to depart from like my own understanding of fiction even. But once I got there, I embraced the ambiguity. Yeah. And I think writers have been doing that for a while. Like, you know, you're talking about how Kafka, you know, where you wake up and this guy's turned into a bug. There's no explanation.
No. It's just absurd.
Yeah. Just either get on the ride or just hop off. Right. It's like the beginning when the train is going slow enough where you can just like hop off. But once you're on it, you've committed. So, yeah. I mean, I think it is everywhere. I think for our listeners, you know, who are listening, it might help to kind of think back about, you know, some of the stories that you've read. Even the last one, An Unkindness of Ghosts. I felt like there was ambiguity we talked about in genre of the novel itself. It was blending genres, but also in the characters, you know, and how they think of things like gender even. And so, I don't know. Do you guys think that we're going to see more of this, more ambiguity in fiction and storytelling?
You know, I don't know. I think there was this moment where it was very self-referential. And I would seem like late 90s into the 2000s is very self-referential. And maybe now throughout the sort of pandemic and some of the political discourse or discord that is going on, I can probably, yeah, I guess so. I think writers pick up on those things. I think artists in general pick up on it. They may not always produce the art in that moment, but I definitely think it sticks in their craw. Like there's something that is happening that is changing the way in which we see reality, because it's no longer reality, mm-hmm. you know? And I think that I would welcome that actually, because maybe we got too comfortable. That's why I like what you were saying, Sylvia. I think at some point we got too comfortable and we allowed for things to kind of progress in a certain way without ever really questioning it. Because I think ambiguity brings up questions. And mm-hmm. that ability to question things or why things are or how we know they are the way they're being presented, I think that probably will happen more and more. Mm-hmm. At least I would like to think that it will happen more and more.
I think the other aspect of like ambiguous storytelling where the ambiguity is the focal point or is part of the point is when you have narrators that we often deem unreliable or come to find out are unreliable. And sometimes it's linked to mental illness, for instance, right? Characters who are described that way. And the classic story, I think, is The Yellow Wallpaper by Charlotte Perkins Gilman, where in the beginning of the story, she sounds, you know, pretty lucid, I guess. But as the story develops, it's a short story, and she is basically locked up in the house under the rest cure, probably suffering from postpartum depression, which they didn't call it that at the turn of the century, 20th century. So then as the story develops, you can't tell who's talking, and she's talking, she seems to be talking in different voices. And at the end, it sort of unravels. And I assign this story often in my class, and students are like, who is that? What is going on? And sometimes they respond with, that is brilliant. And other times they're frustrated, like they can't tell what's going on. And so unreliable narrators often, right, in like Faulkner is an example, for instance, they create these moments of ambiguity that we're supposed to sort of focus on. Yeah, right.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're going to see, like I said before, an example of that in our next novel that we're reading for December, Tope Fullerian's A Particular Kind of Black Man. And I think it will speak to directly what Laura was just talking about a little bit. So please tune in and join us for that discussion, because I think it will be a continuation of all the things that we've been talking about in this discussion, which has also been a continuation of some of the things we've been talking about in this discussion. So, you know, keep track, folks.
Well, I think
casual book club.
And I really also really want to encourage readers to read that book, A Particular Kind of Black Man. And I've now read it for several different purposes and like different book clubs and things like that. And for me, it's been one of the best books I've read in the past year. And it's a book that I think if you, like, we don't want to spoil it, right? Like you have to read it and then join our conversation. And I think rather than listen to our conversation and then read it, I think it's a really good book, and it raises really interesting questions. And there's so much to talk about with that book. Mm-hmm. One of which is about the memory and truth and family. So yeah, read the book. It's good.
You won't be disappointed.
No.
It is excellent. It is an excellent book. All right. Well, that's all we have for today. Thanks for joining our chat this week.
And you can check out Bookish, a casual book club, on dragondigitalradio.podbean.com. You can also like us on our Facebook page, on the Howard Community College's Facebook page, as well as Check us out on YouTube.
And I hear we're on TV too. Howard.
I do hear that too.
If you happen to be flipping through the local TV channels.
There's no getting away from us, apparently. Everyone, have a lovely holiday, and we'll see you next time.
Happy holidays.
Bye-bye.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.